You are Locked On College Football, your daily podcast on all things college football. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I finally hit the right button, Isaiah.
Only three tries.
Three? Come on. Zach Blackerby here with you. Isaiah Hull. I host Locked On Auburn. Isaiah hosts Locked On Wolverines. How are you, man?
You know what? Just trying to power through. It's a little bleak in Ann Arbor right now, both football-wise and today weather-wise. A week ago today, it was 75 and sunny. Right now, it's overcast and 35. So,
yikes!
Welcome to Ann Arbor.
Yikes! You think the weather is responding to how the football season's going up there?
Oh, absolutely. There's no doubt God is trying to send a message to all of us that he is unpleased. That, or he's trying to send a message to us that it's November. I'm not really sure which.
It could be both of those. But yeah, all right. So we're going to ask a few questions, three specific questions, as far as, you know, which team is better between two teams that are kind of on the same tier. Which team is more disappointing? We may have previewed a little bit of Michigan action there. And then which team is more surprising between a couple teams? And then we're also going to hit on Georgia, just because we can. And it's Tuesdays here on Locked On College Football. So, Isaiah, which of these two teams do you think is better? And I think this is relevant as far as possibly fighting for that four seed in the college football playoff. But you put both of these teams out there. I think it's a great question to be asked, and we'll answer it. Notre Dame or Florida, which team do you think is better?
Listen, I went into this when I sent you that message saying that was going to be a topic. I went into it fully anticipating that I was going to pick Florida, that I was going to completely eviscerate Notre Dame because they're just a weird program. They, you know, it just seems like any year that they advance really far, they don't play anyone.
Right.
And that might still be true, to be honest, but their resume, regardless, it ended up being like when I kind of looked at who are the ranked teams they've played one, it was Clemson.
Right.
Who are the other teams they've played? Well, that's not particularly inspiring. But nonetheless, I mean, they have the best win. And I think that's actually says a lot, regardless of whether or not Trevor Lawrence was playing. I do think there should be an asterisk next to it. But, I mean, you still can't take it away from them.
I think there is, though, right? There is an asterisk next to it.
Yeah, that's what I said.
Yeah.
Or did I say there's not? Yeah, there's definitely an asterisk to it.
Right.
Next to it. But at the same time, you look at Florida. Florida does play a tougher schedule overall, but it's kind of a similar boat in a way, right? Because they played two ranked teams. Now they have two us games, but they've played two ranked teams. They are 1-1 against them. We all didn't think very highly of Texas A&M. It was now number 5 in the country. But they took down media darling Georgia, which to me should signal that they are national champions. So there's also that avenue to it. But the problem for Florida is we won't really know what it is until it gets to that SEC championship game. Because you look at who they played. They played at Ole Miss. They played South Carolina. Those are both teams that are not very good. Texas A&M, which is better than what we thought.
Right.
Missouri, which is improved, but still Missouri.
Yep.
Georgia and an improved Arkansas team. But again, an improved Arkansas team shouldn't contend with Florida, at least not yet. But then down the stretch, they play Vanderbilt, Kentucky, Tennessee, and LSU. If you look at Notre Dame, it's kind of similar, right? They play Duke, South Florida, Florida State, Louisville, Pittsburgh, Georgia Tech, Clemson, Boston College, and they have North Carolina, Syracuse, and Wake Forest next. I have no idea is basically what I'm getting at after this, because I thought for sure I was going to say Florida, because you say, hey, SEC, all right, but Florida manages to avoid almost everybody of relevance in the SEC, and Notre Dame continues to just play nobody.
Well, that's somehow the world of living in the SEC East, right? I mean, it's crazy how one side of this conference is, especially when Georgia kind of takes a step back and it's like, oh, they're not as good as we thought they were going to be. But you're absolutely right. I don't think we're truly going to know who this Florida team is until they play Alabama in Atlanta for the SEC championship game. And then it gets really interesting when you look at it from the scope of the college football playoff. If Florida is able to beat Alabama, then what do you do? Because you got to put the SEC champion in. And if you're the college football playoff committee, they've got to put Alabama in because they can't stand it. They've got to do it if there's a chance there. And I think a one-loss Alabama team still gets in there. So then it's like, who do you knock out? But I think if Florida and Notre Dame played right now on a neutral site, I would pick Florida in this situation. I think their quarterback is better. I think their coach is better. And I think when you just look at the Jimmys and Joes, as far as the guys stepping on the football field, I think Florida is more talented. And so, also, as far as crafting a game plan, I'm going to take Mullen. So that's just kind of where I'm at with these two teams. Now, I'll admit, I am always very low on Notre Dame. I'm always lower on Notre Dame than what the national perception of them is. So with that being said, you know, I'm still taking Florida.
You know, I'm right there with you. I think the only thing is when you look at that particular matchup, if it were to happen, is I feel like Notre Dame brings a better defense. But like you said,
yeah,
Florida brings a game changer in Kyle Trask. They've got more weapons. Notre Dame still has got some weapons, but not nearly to the degree. So I just don't think that, you know, Ian Book versus Kyle Trask, I don't think that's a win for Notre Dame. Kyle Pitts versus whoever Notre Dame's trotting out there, I don't think that's a win. One thing that I can say is, you know, when you look at Notre Dame's offensive line, which is much improved this year, mm-hmm. which they're back to what you would expect a Notre Dame offensive line to be, and their defense, that is what would give me pause and flat out just saying, all right, I think it would be Florida. Because if Notre Dame could move the ball at all, which, I mean, it did it against Clemson's defense.
Yeah.
I think that they would have a shot to be in it. I think it would be a very uninspiring game. It'd be the type of game that we would want to rub soap and alcohol into our eyes.
Nice.
Because that's the type of game that Notre Dame tends to play when it plays big games. But I think it would be a lot closer than what I think we're even giving it credit for.
Now, I am not high on Florida's defense at all, but I'm still going to ask you this question. How do you know that Notre Dame's defense is better than Florida's? Because what's a good offense that they've played against? I know Clemson is the go-to answer here, but it was still their backup quarterback. So how do we know Notre Dame's defense is good?
I mean, I guess that's a pretty good point. Because not really sure. Especially that's the thing that you miss by not having non-conference games as well.
Right.
Because even if you look up and down the list of like, all right, what offenses did they play that were good? I got to scroll a little bit before I get to one that Notre Dame has actually played. I'm not seeing any right off the gates. I mean, they've got the number 23 offense,
mm-hmm.
but the next closest ACC team that I see outside of Clemson at 17 is Virginia Tech, who they didn't play, but then you got Wake Forest, who they finish with. Louisville is 38, so that's the closest that they've played.
Yikes.
Nationally.
Right.
But at the same time, with it being all in conference, it's really difficult for you to figure out, you know, what teams are what, right? Because you not having that cross pollination makes it really difficult to evaluate what level a team is. I mean, I think back to the 2006 national championship game held in 2007,
mm-hmm.
Florida versus Ohio State. Everyone anticipated that Ohio State was just going to absolutely demolish Florida.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't happen. And that's going to be the hardest part for the college football playoff committee, especially if the scenarios that they are probably hoping, praying that doesn't happen, Florida beating Alabama and Clemson enacting revenge against Notre Dame. I mean, that would just be such a doomsday scenario because you have to be able to see some of these teams go head to head, and none of them are going to have that signature win in the out of conference like we have in a normal year.
The most impressive thing I've heard you do, Isaiah, is you just worked in the term cross pollination in normal conversation. That's impressive. That's impressive.
I do it. I use the word sports cross-pollination all the time. My favorite term.
You know what? I believe you. Do you ever feel like you are always on, like the world around you is go, go, go with work and social obligations, million things going on? Well, you need to chill. And there's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. Mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Nothing like going up to your fridge, opening it, and seeing those beautiful blue mountains on the can staring back at you. Of course, because it is as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. Perfect for a moment to unwind, relax, watch your team play this season. Hopefully your team is playing this season if you're listening. So be sure to celebrate responsibly when drinking Coors Light. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light and the new look delivered straight to your door at get.coorslight.com. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. All right, Isaiah, we got another question that you asked.
But before you get to it, though, I do want to say, based off of what you said before going to break, hopefully your team's playing. All those poor Old Dominion fans that you just crushed.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've got a big Old Dominion listening, you know, following here.
It's true. So
you just crushed their dreams.
I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. All right, next question. Which team is more disappointing? And we won't stay on this too long just because I care about you as a human. Michigan or Penn State?
See, this is where I now, like, listen, let me put this out there. They're both incredibly disappointing, right? Like,
sure. But
I'm going to go with Penn State.
I am too.
And here's why. You know, Michigan's the one that's gaining all the headlines, right? And Jim, you know, should Jim Harbaugh be out? You know, what a failure his tenure has been. Do we not remember that Penn State was considered a top 10 team? Like, nationally, before Michigan played Minnesota, yeah, it was ranked, but everyone was like, well, it's ranked 18th, and that's a little too high. They're not going to be very good this year. They'll be lucky to win four games, which is essentially where it is living right now, right? Like, it'd be lucky to win four games. Penn State was crowned as, they are just behind Ohio State. They are just a hair shy of elite, and they probably are elite. It's on the verge of being everything. And look at it now. It's winless. Like, okay, you lose to Indiana. Indiana's pretty good, it looks like. So, you know, I saw Indiana in person with the Michigan-Indiana game. And Indiana's been challenging to be pretty good for a while. Penn State got blown, like, okay, Michigan got blown out by Wisconsin. I don't think there's any shame in that. It feels like there's a lot of shame in that if you're a Michigan fan. But there's some shame in that. Yeah, like, but that's, you know, that's kind of what Wisconsin does. Right now, Michigan is playing as an also-ran, which is incredibly disappointing. Penn State got blown out by Maryland.
Maryland
stinks. Might be improved.
Yeah.
But come on, not that improved,
right?
Like, especially if you're Penn State. I mean, Penn State won, what, like 60-3 last year against Maryland?
Right. I mean, my thing going into the year, it's like if you asked me, okay, who's most likely to put it all together, get hot at the right time, and win a national championship between Michigan and Penn State? Now, obviously, I don't think either of them had a chance to win the Natty, but if it's like, okay, you've got to pick one of these two teams, I would have picked Penn State. Just as far as the upside, and it has not been there. It's not been there at all. But part of your discussion about Indiana leads us to our last question we're going to ask today. Which team is more surprising this season, Liberty or Indiana?
Now, I forgot to look up Liberty's stats, so I'll get to that while I talk about Indiana here. I mean, Indiana, I think, is probably the – you know, the right answer regardless.
Oh, I disagree.
But I mean, because they did look dominant against Michigan. They escaped with a win against Penn State. They shut out Michigan State. We'll know more whether or not that is the accurate assessment this week when they play Ohio State. Because if they can hold their own, now I'm not expecting a win, but if they can hold their own, and keep it to a one, maybe two score game, make it a game for 3.5 quarters, then Indiana's really, truly legit.
Right.
Which it very well might be. I don't know that it is necessarily. I know that they've been better than people give them credit for a very long time, but just get within a hair of winning and usually don't get a what looks like a sizable lead and then squander it. That's just kind of what the Hoosiers have done over the last like 10 years. But now you're at least seeing a team that's confident and knows how to win games. I think their strength of schedule is what more so impresses me than what Liberty has done, because Liberty ain't played nobody, Paul.
My thing with Liberty, I mean, their quarterback, Malik Willis, who's been killing it, he was at Auburn. Auburn recruited him as a quarterback. He was committed to some other places as a safety. He was a highly recruited safety, but he really wanted to play quarterback in the next level. And Auburn, Gus Malzahn was like, okay, cool. And he steps on campus. He puts number 14 on his jersey. So immediately Auburn fans are like, oh, here's the next Nick Marshall. Maybe he can take us to a national championship as well. Then this guy, you know, Jarrett Stidham comes in. Jarrett Stidham wins the job. Then Malik Willis is like, hey, I'm going to be a really good backup. And now everyone is just so excited for Malik Willis after Jarrett Stidham's done. And then Bo Nix comes in. Joey Gatewood's a redshirt freshman. And Malik Willis didn't even get a shot. Because all the reports coming out of practice are, this guy can't throw the football. He can't move it in an he can't move the offense in a scrimmage. And so he transfers because it sounds like he didn't even really get a shot. The coach didn't even look at him because of kind of what I just said. And he pops up at Liberty. And I am so pumped that Malik is having this awesome season. I'm really happy for him. I had his quarterback coach on several times, Sean McAvoy, on my show several times on Locked On Auburn, kind of give us behind the scenes, you know, look of what Malik's doing and his training and all that. And I love that he's put it all together, but I'm very surprised. I am very surprised. And it, I guess the coming out party was him leading Liberty to a win against Virginia Tech. And that's kind of funny because that's the team that Auburn beat him out. He was going to play safety at Virginia Tech. And then Auburn's like, well, you can play quarterback for us. And he's like, okay, I'll do that. So I thought that was kind of cool. That was kind of his big moment to shine for Liberty. But I'm very surprised by what Liberty's done, just solely because Malik Willis didn't have a complete game, and now he's starting to have one.
I mean, yeah, I mean, I'm definitely surprised because they are not just winning, but they're winning big.
Yeah.
I think the most surprising thing is that this is a program that's only been around since 1973 total. And, I mean, they've only been in the FBS level since 2018,
right?
And they're just dominating. And it wasn't like it was Appalachian State, where it came off of several national championships at FCS and before transitioning to FBS. And not to mention, when I say they've been FBS since 2018, they were a provisional member. They weren't a full FBS team until last year.
Right.
So the fact that they are doing what they're doing, especially against, I mean, Virginia Tech obviously is the big win there. They've got a couple opponents that they've had that have been impressive, but I mean, that's just the incredible thing is that they've been able to do this so quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. You're listening to Locked On College Football.
Whether it's a mental or physical wall, break through it with Built Go every day. Easy to take in 1.5 ounce packages. Put it in your briefcase for the most focused presentation ever, your golf bag to power through the back nine, or put it in your pocket to get through the day. Built Go is the best workout gel on the market. It's a 5-hour energy without the same crash feeling. Plus, it's natural, so it's better for the body. It's like drinking a monster drink with a third of the caffeine and much better results. Comes in three delicious flavors. I've had all three. I love all three. Peanut butter, honey, chocolate coconut, and chocolate mint. So how does Built Go work so well? Built Go combines energy gel with collagen protein. Collagen protein is fast absorbing, so it gets into the system fast, plus it's easy on the stomach. Built Go is loaded with good stuff to ignite my work and my workout. Beta-alanine, B3, honey, and a kick of caffeine. Built Go then kicks to keep me going strong with 10,000% of your daily vitamins, B6 and B12. Collagen promotes joint, soft tissue, hair, and skin health. This stuff literally makes you look better. Visit BuiltGo.com, use promo code LOCKED, and you get 20% off of that next order. Promo code LOCKED for 20% off at BuiltGo.com. Let's go!
Final few minutes on this edition of Locked On College Football. I know we mentioned that we're going to talk about Georgia, and we kind of did that in the first bit. Isaiah, should we talk about Muschamp at all? Should we discuss that? Muschamp getting fired from South Carolina?
We probably should, especially because my Georgia thing was supposed to be a joke for us, since I always want to rag on Georgia. But
don't joke about dissing Georgia with me, because I'm going to take you up on it.
We'll talk about Muschamp in 2 seconds. I do want to just put some numbers to my hate on Georgia.
Okay.
So for those who have constantly heard me on Tuesdays just rag on Georgia, say they're the most talented team in the country, and a lot of people will be like, well, maybe not, you know, whatever. Listen, at least when it comes to what they've done recruiting-wise, they're the most talented team in the country. 16 5-stars, 51 4-stars, and 18 3-stars. That's an average of average score, according to 24 Sports Talent Composite, average of 93.16. There's only one team that has a higher average per player, and that's just because they have more 4-stars than they do 3-stars, and that's Alabama. But how many 5-stars does Alabama have compared to Georgia? They have 4 less, 16 to 12. They do have 7 more 4-stars, and which obviously means they have 5 less 3-stars. But when you look at Georgia with 16 5-stars, look at Ohio State, 14 5-stars, Clemson, 11, Texas, 4, LSU, 7, Florida, 4, Notre Dame, 2, Oklahoma, 5, USC, 5, Texas A&M, 4, Oregon, 4, Penn State, 1, Auburn, 2, Tennessee, 5, Florida State, 2, Michigan, 2, and then after that, you're mostly getting into places that have either 1 or 0, 5-stars, rather.
Mm-hmm.
When you look at some of the schools like Auburn, 44 4-stars, Michigan, 41 4-stars, Georgia still has more 4-stars, despite having that many 5-stars. There's only 2 programs that have more 4-stars than Georgia does. Alabama with 58, and Ohio State with 1 more at 52. That's how talented Georgia is, and yet they go and lose every big game that they ever have. That's my Georgia rant for the day.
I love that. I think that's good for all of us to hear that every now and then, just to kind of be reminded. We'll spend about a minute or so with Muschamp. We'll wrap this thing up. But, I was a little surprised by this just from a buyout standpoint, and you're in the middle of a pandemic. So what do you do when you fire people, but you say, hey, we're going to let this guy go and pay him lots and lots of money? But that's the world we live in with athletics, and so they decided to make that call. I mean, this is a team that beat Auburn a few years ago, and I covered that game, and it was just like, oh my gosh. So maybe South Carolina's got something here. And then it's been really, really bad ever since then. So his firing has affected, you know, how other teams in the SEC view their team this year. I'm not high on Muschamp. I'm high on him as a coordinator. I'm not high on him as a head coach. I don't know why South Carolina hired him. And somebody else is going to hire him in a few years to be a head coach again. It's just going to happen. But it didn't look good at Florida. Didn't look good at South Carolina. He's been fine as a defensive coordinator everywhere that he's been. But we'll see. We'll see. What, over under 2.5 years before he's a head coach again? What would you take?
I'm going to go over, but just because I'm going to make it 3 years.
Okay.
He's going to go somewhere.
Sure.
Become a defensive coordinator. Rehab himself for 3 years, and then go be a head coach again. Rinse and repeat.
Yeah, you're right. And it may be in the ACC, maybe in the Big Ten, something like that. But I don't know. Not impressed. Somewhat props to South Carolina for moving on. But, I mean, their recruiting class is going to get decimated by this. I mean, it's just whoever comes in is going to be in a terrible situation. It's like, how long are you going to give them? It's just I don't think South Carolina is in a good spot as a program right now.
I think that, number one, I was going to say, Texas, he's available. Because remember, he was supposed to be the heir apparent to Mack Brown. He's available, Texas. Go get him.
That would be hilarious. I would love that so much.
But here's the thing. This is a really tricky year to fire your head coach, because you're going to, number one, you have the COVID of it all. No one's playing the non-conference warm-ups. I think that plays a bigger deal than anyone's kind of giving it credit for,
mm-hmm.
considering that you're seeing a lot of teams that don't normally struggle as bad struggle more. And I think it's because they just got shot out of a cannon. They didn't get that, you know, they weren't able to get their younger talent to at least get a little bit of a feel of what college football is like. And I think that you need that. Now, some programs just hit the ground running because that's what they've been doing for a long time. Ohio State, Alabama, Clemson. But I think that's why, you know, it's the younger teams that are the ones that are struggling more. I'm not really sure South Carolina's numbers, but just when I'm thinking like LSU, you know, they've got a lot of inexperienced players. That's Michigan's problem right now. They've got a ton of inexperience. So I think that that's kind of one of the things, like, it's hard to fire your coach in a year where things are honestly really different. I know fans are really upset. You expect more. To me, just like this is a free year for players, this probably should be a free year for most coaches. Maybe not all. Maybe getting rid of Muschamp was the right move. I mean, he did lose to Ole Miss, got destroyed by Texas A&M, lost to LSU, which is just not looking good at all right now. So, and got blown out, no less. But the other thing, when you mentioned a class getting decimated, we have to remember the Jim Harbaugh rule is looking like it's going to be enacted in January, the one-time transfer rule. So that's something that Harbaugh proposed and had been really championing for years here in Ann Arbor. And it looks like it's going to happen. So not only do you have to try to keep what you have as far as recruiting is concerned, you're going to have to try to keep an exodus from happening anytime you make a head coaching change. The only saving grace for South Carolina is they made this decision now, so they have a head start on anyone else's head coaching search. So it's going to be more probably the teams down the road that make their decisions. Like, could you imagine if Michigan State, if what happened to them happened next year when Mark D'Antonio stepped down 2 days after signing day? Or the day after signing day, and then they had a week to try to find Mel Tucker. I mean, there's just so many different variables that go into this that are different compared to, you know, previous iterations of coaching searches. So I'm really curious to see what ends up happening.
Isaiah, where can people find you and hear you, buddy?
At Isaiah Hole, Locked On Wolverines. Wolverines while you're at USA Today Sports Media Group.
Awesome. You can follow me on Twitter at ZBlackerby and every day on Locked On Auburn. Isaiah and I will be back next Tuesday, but you can hear our colleagues throughout the Locked On College Football Network every day on this podcast feed. Talk to you soon. This has been Locked On College Football.
You are Locked On College Football, your daily podcast on all things college football. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.